back to the Cattle Menu podcast. I'm Caroline Rose, the founder and CEO of K Rose Company and Cattle Menu. Thank you for joining us on this episode. I'm excited to bring you these conversations each week filled with relatable advice and techniques you can take back to your operation. It's my mission to make sure that we can ranch in the next generation. Make sure and subscribe where you're listening so you never miss a new episode. Welcome to another episode of the Cattle Menu Podcast. I'm your host, Caroline, and I am here with Sharmi today. Thank you for being here.
Appreciate the opportunity. It's a beautiful afternoon here in South Texas, and it's sunny. We've had a little bit of rain, so everybody's in pretty good spirits down here.
Absolutely. Why don't you update us a little bit on how you're involved in the agriculture industry and what you guys are up to today?
I today work for a company named Westway Feed Products. I kid that that's my adult job that pays for my cow habit. We also run a small set of Red Angus cows and then have a few other breeds thrown in there, located at the kind of the north side of Texas, or north side of Houston rather. And we run on leased ground from basically Tomball, Texas, all the way up through College Station. So it's I have a combination of involvement on a corporate and professional level, and then on a personal level, running a set of cows with my mom.
Perfect. So talk a little bit about the company that you work for and kind of what sets them apart in the industry.
You know, today in the world, everybody talks about sustainability, and it's kind of a buzzword. But it's really interesting. Westway, the core of their entire business is that they use molasses-based products to make liquid supplements for both beef and dairy cattle. And then we also, a third of our business would also be feed mill. So we take what is basically a co-product, byproduct, or waste product, depending on how someone views molasses, and then other products such as whey, glycerin, corn solubles, etc. Products that could go into a waste stream, and we integrate them into livestock feed. And by doing that, that core concept of sustainability is actually the basis of what Westway was built on. And that's been there for, you know, since the company's been in existence. So while folks today have been, you know, like I said, it's a buzzword when you talk sustainability, we take those co-products, and then the next part of that story comes in when the true basis of what those molasses-based products do is that we help increase forage utilization, whether it be cattle out on pasture or a dairy cow that's eating a TMR or an animal that's in a feed yard that they integrate our liquid supplements into their rations to prevent sorting or as a carrier for a protein supplement, et cetera. So it's pretty interesting that we're a feed company that has a sustainability story that's been in place for many, many years.
I think nutrition in the livestock industry is one of the most challenging areas, but also an area that we tend to overlook. So talk a little bit about maybe what you're seeing as far as deficiencies or kind of trends in the industry. What do producers need to know that's kind of happening right now?
Well, first and foremost, on the beef side, I would talk about fetal programming. And that's something that we have in the last couple years become better versed in, and to understand, you know, for many generations, we just fed in the last trimester to really push those cattle, or we only worried about winter feeding. But what we've learned is that calf is, in terms of development, all three trimesters are extremely important developmentally for that calf. And so fetal programming tells us that we have to have nutrition right the entire time that cow's bred, and then when we're trying to get her rebred. So that's, I think, something that is become more prevalent, is the understanding of fetal programming. And then that ties into the next piece is nutrition isn't cheap. But at the same time, if you don't get the fetal programming right, then how much does nutrition actually cost you? So I think that there's probably a balance there. We in agriculture today are, I mean, we're facing higher and higher input costs, but I think you have to get nutrition right or else it becomes extremely costly. And from a multi-generation standpoint, not only in your cattle, but in your family and in your operation, if you get nutrition right, that contributes to the longevity of your operation. If you get nutrition wrong and your breed up is wrong, or you affect how cattle marble or how your yearling heifers breed, et cetera, because you cut margin or cut corners on your nutrition, you're actually affecting multiple generations of cattle and of people. So I think nutrition is much broader in scope today, or we understand it in a broader scope than we have in the past. And it's ever, I think, ever more important that it's an investment in the future.
I don't think we talk about fetal programming enough. I've heard it at, you know, seminars and things like that, but why do you think as an industry we haven't really completely adapted the concept of fetal programming?
One, I think it's just education and talking about it and showing people, you know, with research and experience. You know, right now, I'll give you an example of something that I think is an example of some fetal programming effects that people are going to learn from in a negative way. In the Midwest right now, there's a lot of folks that their breed up this fall has not been very good. And very simply, they've been through a couple years of drought. And we know that when nutrition and high temperatures combine, when you have bad nutrition or poor nutrition or challenges in those early trimesters of when a cow is bred, the end result is that you have cattle that A, don't breed up, or the resulting heifers have challenges getting bred, et cetera, et cetera. So it's exponentially, it multiplies, I guess, is the way I would describe it. And I think as we experience things like that, fetal programming is going to come further forward faster, and people are going to have to understand its effects. You know, and we in agriculture, we're traditionalists, and the worst thing that we could do is do things the same way that our grandparents did or the generations before us. So as we learn more about fetal programming, it's going to call for some change. And in agriculture, we're not always adept at changing, but I think for generations and for people to carry forward, we're going to have to become better educated, more progressive minded. And this is just an example of that.
There was a lot of issue with breed up here in the north this year, and I'm sure you've heard about it. Lots of open cows, lots of open three-year-olds. And it's really interesting now that you bring up fetal programming. I didn't hear one person talk about that being a cause. I saw every other factor in the world being blamed, right? Drought, quality of grass, I mean, all of these things, but I never once heard people say, well, maybe, you know, we didn't have the right nutrients years ago.
Well, if you, it'd be interesting to see of yearlings, two-year-olds, three-year-olds, those cattle that were in utero during the drought, if the breed up percentages are lower on those cattle. That would be, you know, pretty interesting to find those numbers and to see if that ties together. But I would venture to guess that nutrition is directly correlated to a lot of those poor breed ups across the country this year.
That was my assumption too, not having experienced it on our operation, but just hearing and kind of when you dive into the nutrition, one of the conversations that people were having was the grass quality. And I think grass quality is something we overlook in a cow-calf operation in particular, because we just sort of, And again, this isn't for everyone, but I think it's human nature to be like, okay, we got the calves born, we fed them through the winter, we're just going to turn them out. And talk a little bit about what you should be looking for, how to assess, you know, are we meeting all the nutritional requirements on grass? What are some signs, some symptoms? Talk a little bit about when we're all, that sigh of relief we all have, right? When it's May or June, everything's calved and we're getting ready to turn them out. What do we need to be paying attention for?
And I think you have to look at it in a normal year versus in an abnormal year. And one of the things I've learned at Westway Feed Products is the importance of knowing the value of your grass, of testing and whether it be, and I should say, knowing the value of your forages. It's not just your grass, but it's also your hay, it's your silage. I think it goes in multiple levels. In a normal year, depending on your seasons, because it varies from West Coast to East Coast in terms of when is your lush grass, et cetera, but nature says that we have a time period when grass is at its highest value in terms of protein, nutrient opportunity for cattle to go and gain. And then there's times when that grass will decline in value. And it changes from year to year. And again, it goes back to that generational thing of maybe we haven't in the past paid attention to, I mean, it just like what you just said, we just always, you know, in the fall, when you're in the South or through the middle part of the country, your grass declines. In the spring, it's good. And we do the same thing every year. But we have the opportunity, and what we need to do instead is recognize that, you know, when there's a drought or when it's a good year, that that grass is going to be totally different. Maybe in some years it's high in protein, and some years it's not high in protein, or it's not, the value doesn't last as long. And fortunately for Westway, we help to bridge that gap according to when your cows have, when that gap becomes larger, we can help supplement to help bridge that gap. And when that forage is dry or lower in protein, that's when you can utilize a liquid supplement or any type of supplement is needed. When your grass is declining in protein, that protein in there, the added sugar value that you get from a molasses supplement, that's what you need. So it goes back to knowing what the value is of your grass this year. Just because it was this level last year doesn't mean it's at this level this year. And as we learn that, we can become better managers and do a better job of providing nutrition for our cattle.
Are you trying to find the right planner to start the new year with? Look no further. We have created the Cattle Menu Planner for ranch wives, mothers, and daughters who are looking for the perfect place to capture all of their thoughts throughout the year. Our planner is the perfect guide to help you get your operation started. In the Cattle Menu Planner, Paving Your Path, you will create the foundation for your operation, set goals, and learn how to implement them. We have included our customer favorite blank calendar pages so you can start when you're ready. Grab yours today at cattlemenulive.com/planner. To get a sneak peek of some of the new sections in the planner, you can go to cattlemenulive.com/preview.
And I think it's so important to just stay proactive on that, because I know in our situation, kind of reassessing the needs is almost a yearly thing.
Absolutely.
I mean, we can't just, you know, make one decision and be done. And so how, you know, how often are you recommending that people are kind of looking at what the weather looks like and their herd and kind of adjusting things? Is that a yearly thing? Is that every 6 months? What does that look like?
I do think it's a yearly thing for me personally. And I think we get caught up in the day-to-day of just running cows or running a dairy or running a feedlot, and you get into the hustle and bustle and you don't step back and say, okay, where are we? And I think that's what we need to stop and do and say, okay, maybe I'm in a normal year and I have 3 or 4 years, 10 years of grass data and rain data, and I know that my grass is going to be in this protein level and I'm okay. Or maybe it's I've had a drought or I'm really short. You know, I need to go and test my forages. I need to test my hay. And those are the years I think it's even more important to test. But I think annually is probably what we should be doing. But I know a lot of us, like I say, we get caught up in the just the run of trying to keep things going. And again, it's a mindset change. Have you tested your forages? Have you tested your hay? Have you tested your silages to know where you are? And it's a mindset. I think we have to get into that mindset of doing that. I personally, I'm not good at making sure I do it. But when I realize that it all, again, ties into fetal programming, it ties into the bigger picture long term, I've begun to get better at it because I'm seeing results. I've had some conversations with my mom and you know, when breed up is better, when the calves are getting on the ground or healthier, things are just clicking. Even though we came through some really, really tough times in the past, say 24 months here in Texas in terms of it being dry, but because we did some of those things in terms of testing, making sure that we maintain protein levels with whatever we were supplementing, I think you begin to see the results. So then it makes you recognize the importance of testing. So on an annual basis, and for sure in the years when you're having a environmental or natural disaster like we've had, you know, in terms of drought.
When you're looking at your own cows, what are the first few red flags that you can see or you tell your customers about that it's almost like, okay, this is most likely a nutrition issue in some capacity?
If you watch body condition score on an annualized basis, not just when you wean calves or before you breed cows, if you try to maintain a body condition score, say a 5, and not let that cow go down to, you know, below a 4 or way up high, because that gets too expensive. But if you try to not have extremes in variation, it actually is more economical than if you let those cows go down and get behind, because to catch a cow up is more expensive than to keep her in a range that's not as wide. So body condition score is probably the first thing that I monitor, because again, if that cow's in good body condition score, that means that first thing she's going to take care of, nature says she's going to take care of herself, then she's going to breed up, and then she's going to take care of that fetus internally. So you have to have the basics right of her body condition score has to be right before anything else can happen, just according to nature. So I think monitoring body condition score, and like I say, I know traditionally we look at it 90 days before we breed cows, we look at it when we wean calves. I personally try and look just across the entire year and keep those cows at a consistent body condition score so they don't get behind.
It does seem that when people try to save money in the nutrition realm, that doing it right the first time is actually what saves them money. Because I think, like you said, catching up cattle is really challenging. And it's also really costly to have a year where you don't have a good breed up.
It is much more expensive to catch cows up in terms of body condition. And then you have cows that breed late. You have, it adds up, because with that cow's thin, it takes more money to get her caught up. The opportunity for her to breed earlier is less likely. So she calves later in the calving season. So her calf is lighter weight. That costs you, you know, multiple places. So if you, in the long term, work at keeping your cows in a consistent body condition score, not having as wide a range of body condition scores, it ultimately pays money instead of costs money.
Which can be so hard to wrap our mind around, because I feel as if it's hard to... Well, it's just hard to see the impact on cattle, right? Where we're thinking about what we're feeding them now is going to affect the calf out of those, you know, calves that are in vitro in 2 years. I mean, it's really hard to wrap our mind around how long that process can take.
We in the beef industry have the opportunity to shift our paradigm. And this ties into, you know, if somebody goes in and talks with consumers, you can tie it into talking all the way through to that level of maintaining our cattle's nutrition at the right level so they breed up, so they calve at the right time, early in the calving season, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It all ties together. And I think that's our long-term opportunity. And it is, like I said, it's a mind shift. It's a change. I promise you that my cows, probably nutrition value-wise, they're probably more, they're better fed than I am. Let's just put it that way. Is, you know, when it comes down to it, if you look at human nutrition requirements versus cow nutrition requirements, I'm pretty sure my cows eat better than I do. And the reason of that is that I understand that when those cows are right, they're on their game. They do their best job when, in terms of how they convert grass to protein, how they breed up, how their calves perform, all of that ties together when nutrition is right. And if you look at it generationally, it becomes additive. And I think we just are going to have, like I said, a paradigm shift and work towards having that mindset of the importance of nutrition and how it contributes long term.
Where do you think we're headed in the future when it comes to some new, you know, developments, new studies coming down the road?
Technology is going to come at us at a faster pace, a more rapid pace, and the early adapters of technology are going to be the folks that are going to lead the way, and the folks that are commodity operators or who don't adapt, and not necessarily in big ways, but maybe just making sure that those cows are in a little better body condition score over time. Those are going to be the people, I think, that advance. And I'll give you an example. I am affiliated with a company named 406 Bovine. They're a facial recognition company. And I think in time, that type of facial recognition, where you can go out with your cell phone and I can walk up to a cow that I've already videoed her face, I can take a picture or scan her face and her production records will pop up for me. So if I, you know, and that's great in a pasture or in a pen for me, but imagine in a feed yard, if I needed to pull up the production records of an animal and he lost his EID, if I have facial recognition, because that's lifelong for that animal, think about how that helps you in terms of lost tags or things like that. So I think those are just examples, but technology is going to come at us at a faster pace, and we're going to have to decide to be a technology adapter if we're, how we're going to succeed. I think that's going to contribute to success. And I'll give an example. Bradley Three Ranch up in the Texas Panhandle, James Henderson, Mary Lou Bradley Henderson, and Minnie Lou Bradley, I've helped them for a lot of years since I went to school at Clarendon Junior College. I've been off on and off of that place. And they were early adapters of so many technologies and so many concepts. And they're going into their 64th sale this year. And not a lot of seed stock operations can say that they've been continually in the seed stock operation or continually in business. But they adapted multi-sire pastures. They adapted ultrasound, DNA, just so many technologies. They were willing to step out there and try them, and it's allowed them to be a leader. So I think all of us are going to have to adapt technologies and adjust to some paradigm shifts to be successful long-term in the beef industry.
Are you looking for a way to make positive steps towards your goals and have a community to support you on your journey? The Cattlemen U Collective is our revamped online membership community for ranch women to connect and learn ranch skills. We will be covering our six pillar topics: money, cattle, relationships, home, faith, and cooking each month. The collective is perfect for the ranch woman who is yearning for community that will meet her where she's at and challenge her to reach new, bigger goals. You can join as a monthly member today at the link down below.
And there is some cool technology coming out. It feels like at a very rapid pace, like you said.
And the internet has changed the availability of information. Social media has changed the availability of good or bad information. So I think you have to, sometimes you have to delve through it and see what applies to your operation. And then there's sometimes where I know I just turn it all off, because if you think about it, we're more connected to information than we ever have been. And it's okay to just turn it all off. You know, this morning I was putting hay out and I just stopped and sat there for about 10 or 15 minutes and looked at the cows and calves and thought, hey, we're in good shape condition wise. This is working. Well, maybe I need to do this different. So there's a balance of utilizing all of what's coming at us. You know, the information highway is really rolling fast, but I think it's okay to stop every once in a while and remember why we do what we do in the cattle business. And it's a lifestyle. It's about the Western set of values that we all appreciate. So I think it's a combination of both, and balancing the two is important.
Yeah, I love that last thing you said. We sometimes have to stop and look around and realize, one, the beauty that it is to be in agriculture, and two, what an honor it is to be able to raise food for the rest of the world.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, ultimately, we are putting food on the table, and we talk about that at Westway, is we feed the world. And we as beef producers, every chance that we get to talk to young folks and future consumers about, hey, livestock, cattle in particular, beef, dairy, all, they're the ultimate upcycler. We take forages, whether it be grass in a pasture, hay, silage, whatever. We take forages and we convert it to protein for human consumption. And the much broader picture of the purpose of what we're doing, I think when you keep that in your mind, it becomes purposeful, because then you want to do things really well. But it's also important that we talk about that. You know, I'm fortunate that I get to judge a lot of livestock shows, a lot of cattle shows across the country. And I think the reason I get to do that is so that I can encourage people to go out and talk to others. You know, talk to your school teachers, your preachers, your lawyers, your person at the grocery store, whomever that, you know, person you sit next to on an airplane, talk to them about what we do. We feed the world by allowing beef animals, dairy animals to convert forage to protein. Without that, we're in a heap of trouble to feed the world.
Absolutely. I think this is perfect timing for us to go into our quick fire questions. So these are just fun questions that we like to ask every guest at the end of every episode. And our first question is, what is your favorite kind of steak and how do you like to cook it?
New York strip, medium rare.
Ooh, a New York. No one has said a New York in a while, so I'm glad you said that. The next is, what is an agriculture industry topic that you think we need to talk about in the mainstream media more often?
Obviously, fetal programming, but I would also throw in there touching young people, particularly like fifth, sixth, seventh graders, kind of junior high age, while they're at an age that we can imprint the value of agriculture to them.
Absolutely. I love that. Okay, what is the best piece of advice that you've ever been given?
Without a doubt, do the right thing. Mary Lou Bradley Henderson stressed that to me in my years while I was on their ranch. Do the right thing. And there's times where maybe I miss. Boy, I sure try. Do the right thing. And I think if you do that, you do right by your livestock, you do right by your friends, your family, consumers, your customers, and it kind of just brings everything into focus. do the right thing.
I think that's such good advice, because oftentimes the easy thing is not always the right thing. And, you know, one of the things that we talk about a lot in Kettleman U and in Ranch Camp is be the change that you want to see on your operation. And the right thing a lot of times is the crossing of the T's and the dotting of the I's, the picking up the trash, the closing the doors, that, you know, taking the tag backs off the ground when you cut tags, like a lot of those little things is what is the right thing. And we just get so busy. Sometimes it's easy to do the easy thing versus the right thing.
Yep. Do the right thing. And it seems pretty simple, but it really adds up. And I just sometimes I step back and just ask myself, is that the right thing to do? And you're right. It's not always the easy thing, but long term, do the right thing and you'll do right, like I said, by your critters, by your people, and by those that you're selling to.
Okay, the next and last rapid fire question we have is, what is your non-career dream job?
Oh, that's a good one. I think I'd like to be the person that just needed to sit on the beach and check to make sure that everything was going okay on the beach somewhere.
That sounds pretty great, actually, especially with the cold front we have moving into Montana here soon. I wouldn't complain about that.
Like I said, I like the beach and I like the power of the ocean. And surely there's a job somewhere where somebody just needs to hang out on the beach and make sure that everything's okay. I'd probably volunteer for that job.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, one thing for sure that you said in this interview is about, you know, judging shows, and maybe we'll have you on another episode to talk a little bit about that, because I think that the show world and the production agriculture world can be miles apart, and sometimes we don't know what's happening in either world. And so I think that's a great conversation, is to just, you know, how do we mesh them a little bit better? Is there a way? What do we need to know? What's happening in the show world that in production agriculture we need to know? So I'd love to have that conversation sometime, because I think there's a lot to that as well.
Oh my, you've hit on one of my hot buttons and one of my passions. So I happen to believe that you can have cattle that work in the show ring and work in the pasture. And I'm probably one of the few people that believe that, but it comes down to management and selection. My background has allowed me to create cattle that do that. It's a lot harder than we think it is, but it can be done. And the show ring is a powerful tool when used correctly. And I think it has value. I'd like to have that conversation at some point in time.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we'll put all of your information in the show notes. And I think this was a great conversation, and we'll schedule that show conversation, because I think that there is a lot to learn from both sides. And I have a livestock judging history and judge some shows, and so I'd love to have that conversation with you. So we'll be sure to get that on the calendar.
Awesome. Well, thanks for the opportunity. I've enjoyed it, and always enjoy listening to you guys' show. It's a lot of fun, and just all the different perspectives that you bring forward is sure interesting, and I appreciate it.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate your time today. Thanks again for listening to the Cattleman U podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and review if you're listening on Apple Podcasts. We are thankful to have you in your community. Like always, remember, the grass is greener where you water it.